the existence of hydrates on the blowout preventer and the capping stack is indicia that there is gas there, because the gas combined with the cold water and the pressure is what produces hydrates. So there is some amount of methane gas in that. The exact percentages, we have taken samples and they're being analyzed ashore. Some samples done on scene based on the samples we're taking in around the wellhead indicated there was about 16% methane, but that needs to be validated by a shore test.
During the July 21st press conference, we also asked Thad Allen to describe all of the leaks identified since the capping test and to talk about any new ones they've just discovered.
And I can take you through the general grouping of them. On the 17th of July, that was the event that we noted that was 3 kilometers southwest of the wellhead that we now have attributed to be in place before this started, probably attributable to another well. Then we had a series of anomalies that were detected on the 18th of July. And these are just differences in density and return on both the seismic and the acoustic sensors. They were investigated with ROVs. They thought there might be some plumes or some gas bubbles, but when they were followed up with ROVs, there were no other indications observed, and we closed out on those. Following that, on the 19th is when we started to observe the bubbles around the current wellhead and the blowout preventer. Those have already been reported. And these are emanating from the wellhead itself through gaskets and seals that happen to be leaking. And finally, we found another leak just yesterday in the BOP on the annular preventer. That's the upper part of the BOP or the lower marine riser package. And that's attributed to a leak in a gasket as well. I think what you're generally starting to see is from the blowout preventer, it's been down there a long time under a lot of stress. And just like any other piece of equipment, we're starting to see some small leaks around it. But that's been it so far.
Dr. Samantha Joy of the University of Georgia became prominent in the headlines after establishing new problems in the Gulf of Mexico due to large plumes of oil and methane, posing a risk to oxygen levels in the water column. BP downplayed the results of her initial tests. Dr. Joy has persisted, though, in her research, and she points out that the type of specific testing she's been doing takes time and multiple analyses. She documents her research at gulfblog.uga.edu, and a documentary produced by the University of Georgia is airing this week through the Georgia Public Broadcast Network. On July 9th, we asked Dr. Samantha Joy to discuss unique problems related to the specific drill site of the Deepwater Horizon. The rig that would have produced a very large amount had it been operational now appears to be sitting on a large methane gas field, which poses further risk. Pressure from the capped well could put too much force on weak points, a known fissure identified along the pipeline, for example, and other locations at or near the BP rig.
The Macondo prospect, which is what the Deepwater Horizon was drilling into, it's an interesting and unique reservoir because many of the oil reservoirs in the Gulf of Mexico are overlain by salt. This one is overlain by sandstone. And the difference between salt and sandstone is a really, really important one. Salt has, it's a very tight crystal structure, very low permeability, very low porosity. You're not going to get gas accumulating in salt, okay? It's easy to drill through. It makes a nice, tight cap rock. It's an ideal cap for an oil reservoir. If your goal is to tap into the reservoir and get the oil and gas out of it, then you want salt over the reservoir. Macondo has sandstone above it. And sandstone, which, you know, most people can relate to, is just sand. It's very porous, high permeability, and can contain enormous amounts of gas. And this reservoir, the overlying sandstone, is very, very, very gassy. And that's why when you hear these stories about when they were drilling this reservoir, they kept getting kicks of gas, gas burping up the pipe and causing kicks and problems with drilling. That's because the sandstone they were drilling through was very, very gassy. It's sort of like the situation in the North Sea where you're dealing through very, very gassy sands to get to the oil underneath it. So that made drilling into the reservoir difficult and dangerous. And when the drilling mud was removed from the pipe and replaced with seawater, the pressure, they had no way to regulate the pressure in the hole, and, you know, gas came up the pipe and exploded, and the rest is history. But it's the gas that caused all the problems during drilling. It's the gas that led to the fire and explosion that led to the sinking of the Deepwater Horizon and really generated the entire accident and the mismanagement of how to handle the gas during the drilling. I mean, I'm not an engineer, and I use the word mismanagement probably a little loosely, but the fact that they, knowing that this was a gassy hole and replacing the drilling mud with seawater sort of opened the door that, knowing how gassy this well was, I think that was why there was debate about, you know, removing the drilling mud from the hole. So when that bolus of gas came up the pipe, then you've got a big problem because now you have no control over pressure and you can't regulate it. And as I said, that's what ultimately led to the explosion and sinking of the rig. Gas is why the top hat didn't work, right? Most of the problems they've had trying to control this well have been related to the gas flow and the formation of hydrates. And the gas is really the sort of the evil demon of this story because the gas isn't manageable. It expands tremendously with reductions in pressure. You know, when you have the pressure of the reservoir and you take that reservoir fluid and you then take it up to the surface of the seafloor or the surface of the ocean, you've got hundreds-fold increase in volume of gas, about 600 times to be exact. So a meter cubed of gas at the reservoir temperature and pressure is about 600 meters cubed out of the reservoir. And that's a tremendous, tremendous problem. And the gas represents a serious issue for the water column for the ocean because of the oxygen demand that it represents. So the gas is the problem. In terms of the fissure, I've heard many, many stories about fissures, and I don't know exactly what is meant by that, whether it's a fissure along the seafloor or a, you know, the casing isn't intact and has a fissure in it and gas is coming into the casing below the seafloor or something like that. I mean, there are many, many possibilities, and I haven't seen evidence to convince me that any of them is real or accurate. But I don't doubt for a minute that the gassy nature of this reservoir could result in some of the gas coming out of the pipe at the seafloor could be leaking into the pipe through a fissure in the casing because there's, 12,000 feet of pipe or thereabouts between the seafloor and the reservoir. And when this thing originally exploded, if there was any damage to that sub-seafloor casing, then gas from the sandstone could leak into the casing and out the top of the hole. And that makes it even more difficult to cap it and control it because, again, the gas, it expands as you reduce the pressure. So, you know, you're not dealing with a constant here. And the oil is going to change, too, in terms of volume, but it's the opposite problem. The gas is expanding. The oil, when it gets colder, is going to contract a little. So the gas is, I think, really what makes this engineering-wise a nightmare to deal with.
Are you suggesting, too, that capping this thing may cause pressure that would make underlying line problems worse and perhaps even worse than what they're dealing with now?
It certainly is not unreasonable to think that and wonder about it. I think that without having relief wells in place, given the fact there is so much pressure, that the reservoir is so overpressured with gas, and we don't know what state the subsea floor casing is in, doing what they're doing now, which is siphoning off as much as they can, to me, that's probably the best thing they can be doing until they get the relief wells in place. I would worry a great deal about capping it off completely because of overpressure. And you don't even have to worry about deep subsea floor casing. You know, just the stress on the casing near the seafloor from the failure of the rig and the collapse of the riser, you could have a fracture in the casing. There are at least three ruptures in the pipe, I've heard. So, you know, at the seafloor. And if there's something that's shallow below the seafloor that you can't really see, I mean, there's just no telling how much damage there is to the casing. And I'm just talking shallow, not deep. So it's just impossible to say without seeing all of the data. I'm sure they've done scans of the pipe, and they know where the weak points are, if there are any, at least the shallow ones. And I think that what they're doing now is probably the best thing that they can do, given the circumstances, until those relief wells are in.
If the relief wells don't work, their backup plan is to route the oil some miles away to other wells. What about that? It seems as if more technology would be used and more of an opportunity for failures of the kind that would be impossible to deal with.
It seems to me that we've let a genie out of the bottle here. And, you know, getting her back in the bottle is going to be difficult. And, you know, you're right. It could make things worse. It could create unexpected difficulties. But we simply don't know at this point how the system's going to respond and how even tenable, you know, the option of using far-field wells to pump this reservoir. I think that's sort of something that's being put out there as, if this doesn't work, then we have a backup plan. It may work out that, you know, this thing simply has to flow until the pressure is relieved to such an extent that they can safely cap it.
they've got a lot more information about the reservoir and its behavior than any of us on the outside do. And I have to believe that they're really trying to do everything in their power to they're doing everything in their power to control this thing. But at the same time, they don't want to make it worse. And I think that they're being conservative, and justly so, because you don't want to make this worse. And believe you me, they could make it worse by capping it and overpressuring it and having it blow out somewhere else that you can't control at all. Like if there was a rupture in the casing far down in the seafloor, then you can't really fix that. So they want to keep it at a problem that is to some extent controllable.
We heard concerns expressed by Dr. Craig McLean of McLean Labs that there is the possibility that in the Gulf of Mexico, there will be a tipping point reached. Can you comment on what that might mean?
There are chances that this could alter flow in the system with respect to how things flow from top to bottom and bottom to top. And the oxygen issue is the big one, because if you deplete oxygen from surface water, you can replace it pretty easily with atmospheric exchange or with primary production by phytoplankton. That's why anoxic hypoxic zones in, like, the Mississippi River plume anoxic zone, that's a seasonal feature. It happens in the summer when the water is stratified and stable, and then when it mixes up in the winter, it resets itself and goes away. Well, in the deep water, there is no such seasonal reset button that you can push to set the system back up as it was before. If oxygen gets depleted in the deep water,